Hijacked, A Beechwood Adventure by G. Michael Smith. Chapter 11. A Building Party and Dark Tunnels. The plan for Saturday was to meet in the maple tree at 9 a.m. Everyone was to try and make a safety belt with two ropes with carabiner clips at the end. If they could, and Billy said it was safe, then they might be able to visit the treehouse. There would be no borrowing. Everyone had to have their own safety equipment. Only Maddox had been successful in equipping himself. The rest would have the following week to get the required belt, rope, and clips. Once on the ground, they all gathered around Maddox and looked at his safety belt. "I had like 10 of these clips that I collected last year. They came free on a giant bottle of Gatorade," said Maddox. Petra slithered up to him. "Hey, Doug, how about giving me a couple of those? What you got to trade? These are pretty cool, and they might come in handy later." Petra pinched her chin and crooked her finger and thumb. "I will grant you a favor the next time you ask for something." Maddox cocked his head to the side. "Doubt there's anything I would need from you, but I'll tell you what." He looked up at everyone. "I have enough of these for everyone, but only as a loaner. I want them back when the summer's over." They all nodded their heads and promised to return any clips he loaned them. "We have our Monday meeting on the lawn. I will bring them." Maddox and Billy climbed up to the treehouse and fixed the pulley system so that they could pull up the lumber and build a railing around the edge of the platform. It was about 8 feet wide and 10 feet long. The tree came up near the edge of the platform near the middle. The main platform stuck out on the freeway side, making it difficult to see if you didn't know it was there. Jackie and the rest of the gang attached the materials to the bottom pulley, and then they all hauled on the rope, lifting the materials to the platform, where Billy and Maddox untied them and sent the pulley down for the next load. It took 5 lifts to get everything they had collected onto the platform. Billy came down the tree and called a meeting to order. "We have not collected enough materials to build proper walls and a roof. If we're going to use it safely, we have to do this right. All the lumber up there is going to have to be used to fix the floor. After I inspected it, I noticed a few weak spots. I suggest that Maddox and I fix the floor, and you guys spend the rest of the day scavenging. We need more lumber, like 2x4s and some plywood. Even small pieces will work. We can use it for the roof. Screw and nails, too. Oh, and a good tarp. Once we have a solid roof, we can use the tarp to keep the rain out." Maddox and Billy fitted the pallet boards in a neat pattern over the entire floor of the old lookout platform, while the rest of the gang returned to the glen to look for materials. Billy had not borrowed a saw, so the boards just stuck out in a random pattern over the edges. He would cut them off when they were done. The end result was, in Billy's mind, almost perfect. Some of the boards were slightly different. Their thickness varied, but they were all the same width. Both he and Maddox sat with their backs to the tree trunk where it passed through the platform. They scanned their efforts. "Looks good, Billy boy," said Maddox. "Yeah, sure does." "Yep, perfect," he said, and gazed out at the view. "You can sure see a long way from up here." "Yeah, it's going to be cool to spend the night up here," said Billy. "When do you think it will be finished?" "Oh, that depends on when we find the wood to finish it. We can work on weekends and after 6 in the evening. It will only take 3 or 4 days if everyone does their share." Maddox's ears perked. He could hear someone calling from over the wall inside the glen. Someone was calling him. "That's my sister. I gotta go." He climbed down the tree, moving from cleat to cleat, taking the time to clip and unclip from the screw eyes. He was quick and soon reached the bottom. He looked back up at Billy and called, "Hey, Billy, I'm going to leave my safety belt in the shed." Billy gave him a thumbs up. He watched as Maddox entered the shed, returned, and climbed up onto the roof, then disappeared into the leaves of the maple tree. Billy leaned back and smiled. He had pretty much organized this whole secret hideout thing. He felt good. He was a good leader. He was looking after his gang like he was supposed to. He stared at the outcrop in the middle of the freeway median. It was surrounded by young fir trees with a couple of alder thrown in. The brush was dense where the trees ended. Some of it had new blackberry bushes climbing down the slope to the edge of the roadway. He could not see an easy path to the rock tower. Down the median, the trees gradually decreased in size. Some could be perfect Christmas trees, he thought, taking note to remember that for next year. He could sneak across when the traffic was light and chop one down. Dragging it back across the busy road was another matter. A guy could get killed crossing that road. The speed limit was over 120 kph, but almost everyone went faster. He glanced back at the maple tree. He was alone, and there was at least 2 hours before he was due home. Climbing down the cedar tree, he found himself not always following his own rules. He felt comfortable with the system of cleats and stopped clipping on halfway down. He decided he would only do this when he was alone. Once down, he entered the shed and removed the safety belt. He felt an urge to explore the newly discovered trap door in the shed floor. But there was no point if he couldn't climb down into the pit below. Wondering if his father may have left one of his ladders in the Cooper house, he walked to the back door and up onto the porch. Laying on the floor of the porch was a 6-foot stepladder. He grabbed it and rushed back to the shed. His plan was to tie a piece of rope to the ladder, tie the other end to the bench, open the ladder, and lower the opened ladder down into the hole. He figured he should be able to lower himself onto the top of the stepladder and climb down into the hole. Getting out would be easy, and all he would need to do was pull the ladder back up by the rope and return it to the porch. Billy inserted the metal bar into the slot the way he had done before, and pulled. The trap door swung open with a creak and a bang. Billy made a mental note to oil the springs and ease the door up more slowly. He prepared the ladder and was soon stepping off the bottom rung. He had brought a small flashlight with him, and he turned it on. He was standing in a cavern with tunnels leading off in two directions, one toward the house and one toward the road. Each tunnel narrowed and fled into spider-webbed-filled darkness. Billy felt a chill that was partly due to the cool earth surrounding him and partly due to a sort of fearful excitement. He decided to explore the tunnel that led back to the house. Billy could walk down the tunnel completely upright, though a grown man would have to crouch down. The ceiling was so close that Billy had to duck the occasional root that had grown through the earth above. Every so often, there were wooden supports to stop possible cave-ins. After a short while, Billy stopped. A brick wall was blocking his path. It must be the other side of the wall he found behind the cupboard in the Cooper House cellar. There were still a few unused bricks piled at the base of the wall. He picked one up and tapped the wall in various places. It was solid and impassable. Billy turned back and returned to the ladder below the shed. The other end of the tunnel led towards the freeway. He stared into the darkness. A shiver coursed its way up and down his spine and out his fingertips. He felt a little like Indiana Jones, except he had a flashlight and not a giant flaming torch. He pointed the light into the tunnel. The beam was bright, but narrow, a mini spotlight that pierced the darkness like a laser-thin beam of light that splashed out where it hit the walls or floor. He took three more steps forward. The floor began to slope down, and the first of many supports came into view. They were still solid and smelled faintly of the creosote used to stop rot, a smell he recognized because of a job he helped his father with last summer. The further he went down the tunnel, the more apprehensive he became. He turned and pointed his flashlight back the way he had come. The light hit the wall behind him, and he realized the tunnel was not only sloping down, but curving to the left. The walls were no longer dirt, they were now solid rock. He shivered, but this time it was with the cold. He pointed his light at the wall. It was a natural tunnel that the builders had tapped into. The walls were damp, and there were no more supports. He was not sure how far he had walked, but the flashlight was definitely dimmer. The batteries were going dead. He stopped. The thought of crawling back through a cold, wet, dark tunnel was enough to make him turn around and head back. He was rushing this time, and shortly he saw a glow and then the ladder standing like a sentry in a pool of yellow light coming from the shed above. It looked eerily alive, as if it were waiting to take Billy and lead him to safety. He climbed the ladder, pulled it out of the cavern with the rope, closed the trap door, and returned the ladder to the porch. As he left the porch, he began to consider how he might put lights down into the cave below the shed. It would be more like the home base of the tunnel. It would also make the tunnel less threatening. Billy was not afraid of darkness. He had been in the dark many times. It was what might come out of the darkness that frightened him. Chapter 12. The Excavation. The next morning Billy was at work again. His father had dropped him off and gone to do a plumbing job on the other side of the glen. Billy was hoeing and wheeling the roots to the pile. He was on his third wheelbarrow when a white van with university markings on the side drove up the driveway over the back grass that was mostly dandelions and right up to the tent surrounded by the yellow police tape. Two men and the woman he had previously spoken to got out of the van. The woman approached him while the man removed a stretcher from the back of the van. They set it to the side and began to take down the yellow tape. They rolled up the sunward side of the tent and light streamed in. Billy leaned on his hoe and smiled at the woman. "Come to get the skeleton?" "Yes, we will place it bone by bone on the stretcher, cover it, and transport it to our lab. You can watch if you won't get too creeped out." She grinned and turned to assist the men. Soon they were all on their knees at the grave, with the stretcher on one side. Billy stood at one end and watched them. They pulled one bone at a time out of the grave and placed it on the stretcher in its normal location. The man in the middle picked up the pelvis, and a number of other bones came with it, held in place by what looked like a leather strap. They fell back into the hole as the strap disintegrated.
"Looks like he was wearing a belt. There must be a buckle here somewhere. I doubt whoever buried him would remove it," said the man, as his gloved hand felt around in the dirt in search of it.
Billy felt his face turn red. He quickly stepped back so they could not see his reaction.
The buckle felt warm in his pocket. Nothing here. Too bad. That might have given us a clue about who he was. Hey, look at this, a man said and pulled out a half-disintegrated old boot with a bony foot still inside. The boot might give us a clue about when this happened. We might be able to date it from the type of material used in the sole, which is pretty much intact, said the other man. Billy backed up further. He felt less guilty for not mentioning the buckle. He figured the boot would help them more than an old brass buckle. The woman stood at the head of the grave, and Billy shivered when she lifted the skull out of the dry earth and dusted it off with a paintbrush. She turned it to look at the teeth. She spoke to her companions. The front teeth are missing, but the remainder look to be in good shape. There are no cavities, which suggests he lost his front teeth by accident. Perhaps he was in a fight. He does not appear to be very old. These teeth suggest he was between 25 and 40. She held up the skull and looked at it face on. The man beside her pointed his finger at the back of the skull. I'm pretty sure this is how he died. The woman turned the skull and examined a jagged hole in the bone. This is not good. This man looks like he was hit in the back of the head with something sharp, or... Billy could not hear what they said next because they whispered to each other. The woman and the man at the opposite end unfurled the tent flap, concealing the three archaeologists. He took a step closer to the tent, but all he could make out was a murmur of voices. One of the men stepped out of the tent and walked to the van. He went to the back, removed a series of mesh screens set in wood frames, and carried them to the tent. He did not speak or look in Billy's direction. Billy moved closer and pretended to be digging out roots. He could just barely hear the three inside the tent.
It must have fallen out when you picked it up.
Check there first. There were digging sounds, scraping, and the rattle of small stones on the screens as they filtered the earth from the grave. There, the woman said.
No, just a rock.
There were more screening sounds, and then the woman spoke again.
Look, I found it. It's a bit misshapen, but it's def...
The sound of two shovels clanking together as they dropped to the ground blocked out the rest of the sentence. The three inside the tent stopped speaking. They continued to sift the soil in the grave. Finally, they came out of the tent and rolled up the side. They lifted the stretcher out of the tent and placed it in the back of the van along with their other tools. They removed the tent and set it to the side. The woman turned toward Billy.
We won't be much longer. We will take the casket boards and try to date them. I will leave the tent here for the police to pick up. I have to call them anyway. Do you want us to fill in the hole?
Billy looked around. Nah, I have a bunch of rocks I have to bury. I can just toss them in there and shove some dirt around. Thanks anyway, he gestured to the skeleton.
Will we be able to find out who he was?
That's if you figure it out.
Sure, said the woman. She reached under the apron she was wearing, pulled out a business card, and handed it to him.
My number is on there. Give us a call in a couple of months, and maybe I will be able to tell you.
Billy took the card and nodded. A few minutes later, the three were finished. They collected their tools and waved goodbye as they drove away. Billy continued to lean on his hoe. He stared down at the hole in the ground. All remnants of the skeleton and casket were gone. On an urge, Billy walked over to the grave, knelt down, and ran his hands through the dry soil. He was not sure why, but he felt they might have missed something. After a few passes, he decided there was nothing there. He stood up and took out the buckle and spun it on the nail. It was definitely a map of the tunnel. It stopped spinning, and he looked at it more carefully. The outer edge of the buckle looked like it had some sort of markings he had not noticed before. They were very faded, as if constant rubbing had worn them away. Billy took his thumbnail and scratched at the edge. He peered again and thought maybe he could see the markings more clearly. He spit and scraped some more, but he could not make them any clearer. He flipped the buckle to the other edge and scraped it too. There was something etched into the brass for sure. He peered at the markings, but could not make them out. He decided to check them out with a magnifying glass when he got to the privacy of his room, and he slipped the buckle back into his pocket. Billy picked up a boulder and dropped it into the grave hole. He was about to pick up another when he heard his dad drive into the Cooper property. His dad got out of the truck and walked toward him.
"They got it moved already? I didn't expect them until this afternoon," said his dad, while staring down into the grave. "Good. Fill it up with rocks. I'm supposed to create a brick pathway to the shed, and it will go right over this."
"The university people said they would call the police to pick up their tent," said Billy.
"Good. What do you want for lunch? I fancy some sushi. What do you think?" His father grinned. Billy loved sushi, especially dynamite rolls.
He dropped his hoe and walked with his father to the truck. Chapter 13. Sleepout Plans. July was half over. The weather was hot and humid. Billy got to leave the Cooper place early. The gang had worked hard on the hideout all week, and it was almost at a point where they could sleep over. Billy had given everyone a day off. The gang was looking forward to a night in their new fort. Billy was still concerned that it might not be safe. He was pragmatic and considered all possible ways that sleeping in the fort might prove dangerous. Sitting in Jackie's room on his beanbag chair, Billy listened to Jackie.
"How about this weekend? It's completed to a point where we could all sleep there overnight. Let's tell the guys."
"I want you to imagine something."
"What?"
asked Jackie, slightly exasperated. "Imagine we are all up in the fort. Everyone's asleep. And Binky wakes up because he has to pee."
"I already thought of that. I made a hole in the wall for our you-know-whats. He can stick it out and pee."
Jackie crossed his arm and looked at Billy, seeming confident he had countered his argument. "What about Petra and Orf? They are not going to be happy with your plan. They will have to climb down, pee in the bushes, and climb back up, and all that in the pitch dark. It's not safe."
"I know. My grandma was sick last year at our house, and she used this potty thing. Bedpan, that's what it's called. They can pee at that and empty it in the morning."
"Can you get it?"
"Of course. It's sitting in the bathroom cupboard under the sink. No one will miss it."
"Good. Maybe we can even make a small bathroom area near the hole and hang up a sheet or something. Petra would want privacy.
For that matter, so would Charming."
"It's decided then. Once we are settled for the night, no one goes down until morning. That way no one will kill themselves in the middle of the night."
"I still think it needs to be tested out. What about just you and me sleeping up there for one night, just to make sure?"
"Ooh, good idea, Billy boy. How about tonight?"
Billy paused. He knew if they were to keep the hideout a secret, they would have to lie to their parents. Billy didn't like to lie, but sometimes it was necessary. The bad thing about lying was the guilt, and of course, getting caught.
He wondered about his dad's reaction if he lied and was found out. The images that followed were not pleasant, to say the least. If he said he was sleeping at Jackie's house and his dad phoned and he wasn't there, then that would not be good. "Billy, what about it? I'll tell my parents I'm at your house and you the same." Billy considered. What if he were to tell his dad the truth? Not just the whole truth. If something went wrong, at least he could say that he did not lie. "I can't lie to my dad."
"What do you mean? If you tell him, he will bring all our parents into it and all that work will be for nothing."
"I said I cannot lie about this. It's too risky. You do whatever you feel will work."
"What are you going to tell him?"
"I'm going to tell him that we built a secret fort and we're going to have a sleepover in the secret fort." Billy paused. "When he asks me where the fort is, I'm going to tell him that that is a secret. I'm going to explain that I have made sure that it's safe. I think he will allow me to spend the night. He will think it's in the glen, and he knows that he could find any fort we might make in the glen if he had to. I will leave out the part about it being 33 feet in the air at the edge of the Cooper place overlooking the freeway. If I tell him that, then he might say no and tell me it's just too dangerous."
"Billy, that's just brilliant. I will tell everyone to do that. If their parents say they can't come, then that's their problem. They cannot, under any circumstances, tell anyone outside the gang where the fort is located."
He thought for a moment. "Everyone except Pinky. He's too young. I know he will mess up. I recommend that we just don't tell him when we're going to sleep over."
"That's a pretty nasty thing to do to him, but I agree. He will just have to wait until next year when he's older."
"So, tonight?" Jackie fluttered his eyebrows up and down and smiled. "What do you say, oh bodacious one?" Billy jumped off the beanbag chair and tackled Jackie. He started to give him a noogie. Jackie squealed and pushed him away. Billy stood. "Pack a sleeping bag, a foamy and a flashlight. See if you can get some food. I'll do the same. I will meet you out in front of your house at 8:30. Billy left Jackie's house and headed home. His dad had said that he would be late and to make dinner ready for 6. Billy got home at 4:30. He opened the fridge and saw the main ingredient intended for dinner. Billy was a good cook. In fact, he loved to cook. He had 2 meals he was good at making. Chicken breasts, smeared with mayo, covered with breadcrumbs and powdered Parmesan cheese, baked in the oven. And meatloaf. Tonight was meatloaf night because the meat was sitting front and center in the fridge. He took out the package of ground beef, ground pork, and ground veal. Billy searched for the other ingredients and placed them on the counter. He looked at what he had. The meat, 1 egg, some breadcrumbs, some barbecue sauce, extra spicy, salt and pepper, and 2 slices of bacon. He knew his father would put onions in it, but Billy thought they were disgusting, so he left them out. After all, he was the cook, and the cook got to make it the way he wanted. He washed his hands and then dumped everything into a large bowl, except the barbecue sauce and the bacon. He stuck his hands into the bowl and mixed it up, letting the mixture ooze between his fingers. When it was fully mixed, he patted it down in a loaf pan, squeezed barbecue sauce on the top, and covered that with the bacon. He turned the oven up to 350 degrees. He set the timer for 1 hour and 15 minutes and cleaned up. He tossed a couple of potatoes in the oven and sliced a tomato to serve as a vegetable. Et voila, he was done. His father appeared to be in a good mood. He said he put a bid in on a new job and it had been accepted.
Billy thought this would be the best time to ask him about the sleepout. His dad didn't seem to mind, but he did ask the question that Billy knew he would. Where's the clubhouse?
Secret clubhouse, replied Billy.
So where's this secret clubhouse? Billy looked at him and shrugged. Oh, I see. It's a secret, so you're not going to tell me.
A secret must be kept. Otherwise
it loses its appeal. I get it. I had a number of secret clubhouses when I was a kid. The thing is, they didn't stay secret for long, but it was cool while they were.
Okay, you can keep your secret, but please be safe.
I have taken care to keep everyone safe. The gang depends on me.
They do, eh?
Well, William, I think that's a good thing. Have fun. Jackie and I were going to try it out tonight to make sure everything is okay before the whole gang sleeps over. We're going to invite everyone for Saturday night. That okay?
No problem, said his dad as he picked up the remote and started to watch the news.
He looked at Billy.
Oh, yeah, great meatloaf, he grinned and continued. Even if there were no onions.
Billy went to his room and started to pack his things.